If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Well, that's a way to start a show, isn't it? Hi, it's John Williams. I think I'm going to just play that at the beginning of all of my shows. Years from now, I'll still be running that because it's pretty good. I think I haven't seen it yet. That's from Hamilton, of course. And Hamilton has been in the news this week for a couple of reasons. We reached out to Chris Jones, the theater critic for the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Chris. It's John Williams. How are you this afternoon?
John, how are you? Happy afternoon to you.
Thanks for some of your time today.
Pleasure.
Just first talk about the news story, and then maybe you can give me some tips on getting tickets and how good the show is, and is it worth it? What's happened with the theater subscription sales and access to tickets to Hamilton in Chicago?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to appreciate is there's never been any show in Chicago like this, ever. Period. Nothing close, nothing in the same ballpark, whole different thing, you know. A demand for tickets like no theater production has ever seen, with a lot of performances potentially. The show could be here for a year and a half, but everybody's, you know, trying to get a ticket. And the thing is, the single tickets, like you buying a ticket, has not yet gone on sale. So there's a lot of tension about when will that be. I think it'll be in a couple of weeks, but we'll get to that in a second. But the problem with the subscriptions is that people subscribe to Broadway in Chicago, and they say, many of them, were told they could then buy up to 8 tickets for Hamilton that they could, of course, then give to their friends and family and anybody else who wanted one. And then Broadway in Chicago appears to have done an about-face and said essentially, no, you can't. No, you can't buy any single tickets. They're all sold out, which is strange given that they're not yet on sale. So that's the, in essence, that's the dilemma, if you like.
So some people have bought tickets for the whole series with the expectation they'd get those 2 and have access to 2 or 4 more.
Or 8, yes, exactly, right.
And that would be worth it to them. I mean, even if they don't go to some of those shows, they figure, what the heck? In fact, you pointed out in one of your stories about this that the whole theater series run in Chicago is less than the secondary market for a pair of seats in New York.
You know, and you mentioned the secondary market, and I, you know, that's a whole other set of issues in play here. The producers of Hamilton have been trying very hard in New York to not let any tickets go into that secondary market. They're trying to prevent people reselling those tickets, and my suspicion is that's why they closed down this attempt, you know, this offer, if you like, to give tickets to Broadway in Chicago.
Oh, here in Chicago.
They're too worried that people are going to turn right around and put those on StubHub or whatever, and they just want to stop that from happening. You know, that's a very, really interesting issue to me, because you could argue you buy a ticket, you have a right to do with it what you want. But, of course, these days, just like the airlines, concert promoters, theater promoters, they're trying to restrict people from doing that.
Well, if I go online, as I did today, I can find secondary market tickets for Hamilton, New York. In fact, that's all I can find.
Right. Well, as you well know, John, these guys are pretty much unstoppable. They'll always find a way to get tickets. It's been that way since, you know, Shakespeare. There's always been a guy. There's always been a guy who can get you a ticket to a hot show
and
if you're willing to pay.
Sure.
And,
well,
you know.
And to your point, Chris, I almost appreciate that because I can't get tickets to the first run in New York. That's sold out. My only access is in the secondary market. And if I want to scrape together $1,000, I can go.
And to some people, it's worth $1,000. There was a very moving piece I read online, actually, about somebody whose mother had just died. And, you know, they come to realize that experience is everything. You know, you have those moments of clarity when somebody you love dies, and they'd gone to the show with their daughter and paid some ridiculous amount of money and then wrote about it afterwards saying, you know, to have this experience with her was worth $1,000. So a lot of people are willing, you know, to spend their money on that. So it's a strange situation. I think it's all compounded by the fact that the single tickets aren't yet on sale. So there's enormous tension around about how am I going to get one? Are there going to be any? I can't go 10 minutes without somebody asking me, you know, how do I get a ticket? It's really an amazing sort of set of circumstances for Chicago. And it's all driven by the fact that there's the show in New York and then there's us. There's nowhere else to see it. Nowhere else. So Chicago's getting a lot of attention.
Do you think part of the demand for it is because people are trying to get something they can't get? We haven't seen the show. We don't know how good it is. Is it worth $1,000?
Right.
But since you know that there's this almost psychological dynamic going on here, isn't there? The less access
hype,
you have.
But yeah. Exactly. There's enormous hype. So I keep telling, you know, I often say around the office that Hamilton is the Donald Trump of arts journalism. You know, if you write about it, people read it. And so to some degree, that creates, you know, that creates the same sort of hype. I think there's analogies between Trump and Hamilton. I really do, although that may sound ridiculous. But it's the same sort of thing. There's so much hype. People are just compelled to try and get a ticket in any way that they can. You know, I've seen it. I think it's a great show. Would I give a kidney for it? I would not, John. That's just me, and I go to a lot of shows. But it's a great show, and I wholly understand that for some people, it's really worth it.
Well, I read some reservation in your prose as you wrote about this. I heard you say, if I may, it's a great show. Not only is it not worth the kidney, it's probably not worth the $1,200 people are paying for online, particularly since over the next 18 months, you'll have a chance to pay for it at a more reasonable price.
Okay, so yeah, exactly right. So if you fast forward to 45 degrees below on a Wednesday matinee on January the 26th or whatever it is, there's going to be seats, John. I mean, there just is. And I also, the other thing that fascinates me about this whole thing is whether or not Chicagoans, who are a little more sane than New Yorkers when it comes to money, I have found in my 20-odd years of living in this city, people here don't generally drop that kind of change quite as readily as they do in New York. So the other question is, are they going to go nuts with this, or are they going to stay in that Chicago, slightly cynical, come on, it's not worth that kind of way? Time will tell, John.
Go back to the controversy with the subscription series holders in
yes.
Chicago, though. Where is that now? Is that story going to change at all?
Well, that's a good question. There's been sort of radio silence for the last few days. As it stands now, as far as I'm aware, they have decided not to allow people to do that. You know, and subscribers are no fools, and many of them sent me copies of emails that came from Broadway in Chicago essentially saying, yes, you can buy eight. I've got about 10 of them in my inbox that are copies of emails that were sent. So I don't doubt for a second that a lot of people really thought they could buy those additional tickets. Whether or not they're legally entitled to buy them is a whole other question, I would imagine. But I think they're going to have to do something for those subscribers because, you know, Hamilton is, at the end of the day, one show, it will go, and subscribers and people who support the arts in Chicago are important, and you have to treat them well, because you're going to need them when you don't have Hamilton, you know.
Yeah.
And Broadway in Chicago is made up of very smart, decent people, and they well know that. So I think some sort of compromise is going to get worked out here at some point.
Or you could drive to Des Moines. Why is the show stopping in Iowa?
That's in like 2029 or something, but yes, eventually it'll be at your local high school. It will be, you know, it will be rolled out. This thing is going to be everywhere. But you know, it's interesting. It's not easy to duplicate. I'm fascinated by this. But you know, if you have a hit movie, you just print up a few more copies, or you know, a few more digitized copies, and then you can send it anywhere you want. With theater, you've got to replicate the company. Every time you open a new Hamilton, you've got to be as good as the old Hamilton. And that's very, very difficult. The moment that people start thinking, you know, the show is going downhill, they're not going to make any money. But at the moment, the amount of money being made on these are stats. I mean, these are like billions and billions of dollars. It really is. I mean, no, all hype aside, and I'm as cynical as every other guy, more cynical than most, but this show is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
Do you have a sense of how good it is without Lin-Manuel Miranda?
I don't think Lin-Manuel Miranda matters much as a performer. I think he's a great performer. He's not essential to this show. There are any number of people, if they cast well, who can do it as well as him. His primary contribution is in the composing, obviously, in the writing. I don't think you need to see him to have a great time at Hamilton. And I don't think you will in Chicago. So that's just as well.
Oh, you don't think he's coming?
I don't think so. They haven't announced casting. It's not inconceivable, but I would doubt it.
Yeah, no kidding. And you also made this piece of advice, and I don't know if it's still possible, but you said go ahead and form a group with your friends and then go get group tickets, which are available. Is that still an option?
Alas, no. It was when I wrote it, and then I think a few people read that, and they're now sold out of group tickets. So you can't actually get group tickets to Hamilton. So now you have to sort of wait for this announcement, which I think they'll go on sale, my guess is, a week or so after the Tonys. That's just a guess, early June, some point like that. And then that's going to be a day, isn't it, when that all goes on sale. But, you know, if you're a sensible person and you're not that crazy about always having the new iPhone or whatever, wait till early 2017. And then I think it will all calm down and you'll be fine. That's my advice.
Here's my last question, Chris.
Yeah.
What's in second place in terms of hysteria, hype, Tony's cost? You said this one's off the charts. What was first prior to this, would you say?
It is really difficult to answer that question because I don't know that anything has ever been on that level. I would say, again, this is somewhat different, but in the 1970s, the musical A Chorus Line was on the front cover of Time magazine. It was on the cover of Newsweek. It was a big deal. Everybody had to see that show. And I would say that was fairly close to Book of Mormon was a big deal, but Book
was
of
Cats?
Mormon's not for everybody.
Cats?
You've got to like South Park. So even Book of Mormon's not that close. So
what about Cats?
Hard to think of it. Sorry?
What about Cats?
Well, Cats in its day was a huge deal. I always remember when I was a kid, I grew up in England, and when I was a kid, I remember opening the paper and it would say, no admission while the auditorium is in motion. I was like, ooh, I want to see that show. And it was, they were the first theme park show, you know, they made it sound like a ride. And Cats was, too, an enormous deal. But none of them, John, none of them on this level. Seriously, none of them. Not even close to this. Never.
Chris Jones writes about the theater scene for the Chicago Tribune. My first email to him was, hey, Chris, would you come on and talk to us about this? And then I emailed him back and said, can you get me tickets? Ha, ha, ha. And I thought, I'll bet he doesn't think that's funny.
I wish you well, John. That's all I can say.
Yeah, thanks for your time,
Hopefully you
Chris.
Know a guy.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I do know a guy, by the way. His name is Lou Manfredini, and he's going to give Brendan and I tickets, and it's really going to be great. He's just going to give them to us as a gift because he's such a good guy. I don't know if you heard about that. I know he hasn't. Okay, we'll pause here and then pick it up with the Spelling Bee and Geography Bee winning questions and answers. This is fantastic. In a minute on WGN. Once again, thanks to Lou Manfredini for buying Brenda and I tickets to Hamilton when it comes to Chicago. And you know, Lou, just if you're listening, if we're in the middle section, that's fine. That's fine. I went online to look at my birthday, October 19th, and see if I could get tickets. And I can, but the very worst seat in the house is about $400. And then in the middle, it's about $600. You know, and then if I bring Brenda, that's like $1,200. And then, God forbid, we get a snack. I'm at $1,500 to go to the show.
That's Manfredini money.
It is now. And, you know, I could splurge that way, but I hear in Chris Jones' voice a little reservation like, hey, you know, if you can't go on your birthday in October, Go in January. It'll still be there. It'll still be awesome. And I was very interested to hear him say that even without Miranda, it is a fantastic show. You don't need him to have the Hamilton experience. I know friends that are going to New York and they're worried that he won't be performing the day that they're there. You know, he takes a show off. So thanks, Chris Jones, for helping us out on all of that. By the way, if you like me on Facebook, and I hope you do, I'm King John on Facebook. I have reposted something that I read on the air, and it's simply Mary Schmeek's column about a friend of mine named Jim Zwitt. Jim Zwitt served in Vietnam, and several Memorial Days ago, actually about 5 years ago on Memorial Day, Jim went to the Vietnam Wall in Washington, D.C., and had a really moving experience. I told Mary Schmeek that she should talk to Jim. She interviewed him and told his story. Maybe it was born 5 years ago on the front page of the Chicago Tribune. That was part of her Pulitzer Prize-winning entry. Mary Schmeek won the Pulitzer Prize, and one of the 10 articles that her editors submitted was this one. And I just put it up a little while ago, and I see that several thousand people have viewed it now and are sharing it. And you can listen to my reading of it if you don't want to just read it yourself. But either way, it's really a moving story. It's Mary Schmeek, and it's an extraordinary story. So Facebook.com, I'm King John there. I got a break, don't I? Can I just play? This will just take a second, Griffin. Bob, are you guys any good at geography or spelling?
Not bad. I'm not B material, but... not bad.
Tungurahua, which means throat of fire in the Quechua language, is one of the most active volcanoes in which South American country?
They had the geography bee.
Okay, I am bad.
You know, it's like Jeopardy. You'll think, I don't even know what you just said. How can I give you an answer? I don't know what the question was. Here it is one more time. It takes about 8 seconds.
Tungurahua, which means throat of fire in the Quechua language, is one of the most active volcanoes in which South American country?
Okay, so all we need to know now is a country in South America. I would prefer that Alex had just said, name a country in South America. Then I've got a shot. Bob, what is your guess to...
Tungurahua.
Without Googling. Like you can,
Ecuador.
Like you know how to spell,
yes.
Tungurahua.
I'm going to say Ecuador.
Griff, you got a guess on this one?
Well, no.
Griff says no. He does not have a guess to this one.
Ecuador. And that is the correct response.
Hey,
at the moment.
Okay, I went from bad to good to bad to good again.
I think you went from bad to cheating, but that's okay.
I did not cheat. There's no way of verifying that, but I'm telling you, I did not cheat.
I trust you, sir, to do the news. That's next here on WGN. Decker, one of our producers, saw Beyonce last night, said really good show, and you're probably getting excited for tonight's show if you got tickets. Friends of mine went to see Beyonce in Minneapolis, and they have a rule at the venue that they went to that your purse can't be bigger than your palm, and a lot of ladies didn't know that, and they said the garbage cans outside the stadium where she performed in Minneapolis were filled with women's handbags and purses. Because you couldn't bring in one that was too big. And so they would just throw them away. And then people were going to these garbage cans and pulling out, so help me, somebody told me this, hundreds of purses and then selling them or having their run of them. I presume they took their ID and everything else out that they wanted, put that in your pocket, whatever. But the purses couldn't make it in. But people were so excited to see Queen Bey that they sure weren't going to... step out of line and not go to the show. So good luck to you if you're doing that tonight. Let's do the Mincing Rascals. We do a podcast every Friday. Actually, this week we did it on Thursday. Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn, and Kristen McQuarrie are the normal lineup. This version will be slightly different. We post this podcast on our Facebook page. You can go to WGNplus.com. I'm King John on Facebook. And you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals on iTunes. We start out with the voice of our friend Steve Bertrand.
and the host of the Business Lunch every day at noon to 1 on WGN Radio.
I'm Eric Zorn. You can read me in the Tribune on Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays, and I would advise that you do so.
And I'm Justin Kaufman. I'm new to the Mincing Rascals, but I'm the host of The Download here on WGN Radio, 7 to 11 weeknights.
Our friend and colleague Kristen McQuarrie is not joining us today. Justin, thanks for jumping in here with us.
Thank you.
There's a story in the news today. Joseph Cremellis, the walking man who strolls about downtown Chicago with suits and long, now gray hair, was attacked this week. I am so sorry to hear this. He was beat nearly to death. The guy that had him almost threw him off a 20-foot ledge, and while he has survived, he's pretty injured. But what a shame. What a sad story. I don't know if anybody has anything else to say about that, except that there's a GoFundMe page for this guy, and he was always, to me, emblematic of, like, the guy that wears the colorful suits. Mm-hmm. You know, just the interesting, fun street life of Chicago.
Always walking, always alone. Yeah, I've never seen him talk.
Speaking of Vince, the guy who wears the colorful suits, I saw him last night in the window at ABC 7 at the final show for Ron Majors, the broadcaster of Sign Off.
Yeah.
But he hadn't been there in a long time. Huh. And so I thought maybe he had passed away or something.
Yeah,
but,
so the walking man was beaten on Lower Wacker Drive, and they've charged a 41-year-old guy with it. I don't know what – I haven't seen anything on motivation yet, but –
just came up and said hello, and the guy started to attack him, it sounds like.
With a bat.
Isn't this the second story of the week? There was another story of a guy who was just stabbed in the gut. Somebody came up to him and grabbed from behind and stabbed him in the belly a couple days ago, too. It was on – maybe he was on a bridge. It was downtown.
Yeah, and he held him. He held him, and the story was he held him until police arrived.
Well, you know, I work late, and so I usually will get out of here around midnight, and I go down through Lower Wacker Drive, and in the last year or so, you've seen populations get bigger and bigger down there. I don't know if the Chicago police have sort of taken a chill on
I think they have.
You know, cleaning it up, but there's almost like another city that's happening down on Lower Wacker Drive.
It's like a movie set down there, and when they redid Lower Wacker Drive, they literally cleaned that out. Now you see people with blankets and cardboard huts down there, and it's really an odd population. But just to get back to this Joseph Cremellis guy for a second. So if you're a tourist or a regular in the city of Chicago, you would often see him, like Steve said, wearing a suit coat usually, right, Steve, and a T-shirt?
Yeah, light suit coat. I saw him last week, in fact. Outside the Showcase studio window.
The picture of him in the paper now is him with gray hair, but forever he had very long, like shoulder length, very jet black hair and a mustache, and was just walking around. He would walk all day. Inevitably, you'd see him. It's kind of like
Vince. I don't know his last name, but Vince is his.
There was a documentary made about him. I was actually one of the people they interviewed in the Vince documentary, and you go, who are these people? How do they get the money to dress and live and just always be walking around downtown?
You know, there's a difference that I hadn't thought about till you just described it, but the Vince character was almost kind of inviting. You know, he's smiling and wearing flashy clothes. The walking man was a little intimidating, or if not intimidating, sort of off-putting. The way he looked and his solitariness of it.
And
it
was very
no one approached
too.
Him. Yeah, it was very mysterious.
I mean, the fact that we know his name, I had never heard his name
neither.
Before. I don't know
I
if
didn't
it had
either.
Ever been published. Is this going to rob him not only of his sense of safety, but also is the privacy, the mystery that
there's,
made
I mean, if you're in Chicago long enough, you start to recognize a lot of characters like the walking man. There's a guy, and I haven't been on this bus in a long time, but the Damon bus. There's a guy who's in a three-piece suit, Latino guy who's got the gray hair, and it looks like he's going to work. He's got his briefcase, but he just rides the bus
up and down
and up and down. So you're like, oh, there's that guy. Like, it's like, I don't think he's actually going anywhere. And then, you know, there's the classics like Ronnie Woo Woo
or Ray,
the singing cab driver. Like, Chicago has a lot of these personalities.
I got news for you, Justin. A lot of us are riding the bus back and forth and not really going anywhere.
They're like little mascots. You root for them. They're part of our little city fabric. And then maybe ultimately, if you walk the streets long enough, especially Lower Wacker Drive, someone's going to beat you up. There is a GoFundMe page for Joseph Cremellis, K-R-O-M-E-L-I-S. His nephew says he needs, or they're hoping to raise $50,000, and they're already about $12,000. Real quick, let's go around the horn. How significant is the Office of Inspector General's report about Hillary Clinton? Is this a game changer? Eric, what do you think?
It's not a game changer, but it doesn't necessarily bode well for Clinton. The game changer is going to be what the FBI finds and reports. You know, this didn't tell us a whole lot new, I didn't think, the report that came out yesterday.
What do you think, Steve Bertrand?
I think it's very significant. I think it puts in words what a lot of people were saying and makes it a little more official. Is it a game changer? I doubt that it is, but it's damaging. I mean, and it should be damaging. It's legitimate. what's fascinating to me is that, you know, she will be pilloried and suffered for this while Donald Trump will have been saying even more. What did he say? He said, oh, you know, they're going to sneak Joe Biden in. That's what I heard now. They're going to get rid of crazy Bernie and Biden's going to run, which is, you know, based on untruths and rumors. Yeah. But he can say those things, not be called on the carpet for it. She suffers for all of it. And it's just the frame with which they come to the race.
I say it doesn't affect her if the FBI doesn't indict or do something that's in the line of punishment. I don't think it affects her because the Democrat base is sick of talking about emails and it's not that big of a deal.
I think she deserves every bit of it. It says that she's not the only one to have mishandled email and that government in general, 80%, they said, of federal agencies are vulnerable. 80% in that report. But she deserves, as damning as it is, I'm not sure it has to matter that much because at the end of the day, it's Hillary or Donald Trump. And in that case, it has to be anybody but Donald Trump.
The fact that she's paranoid and defensive and prone to dishonesty is kind of baked into the price of Hillary Clinton. Everybody knows that about everybody thinks that about right now. So
really?
I don't think
she's dishonest?
I think she is about a lot.
I think she's smug. I think dishonest is a big word. I mean,
the rules allowed her to do what she's did, and the State Department report said no, the rules actually didn't allow for her to do it.
Yeah, I was thinking of this, and I knew this word was going to come up today. Dishonest. I mean, what quienes mas macho? I mean, what does dishonest mean when you've got Donald Trump, who, you know, almost everything he says can be construed as being dishonest, whether he says earlier that I've got millions and millions more votes of Ted Cruz when he didn't, to where he says, you know, he's my best friend when he wasn't. All of those things are not true. Does that make him dishonest?
Yes.
More dishonest than Hillary Clinton, who says that these things were, the word she used was allowed, not approved, but they were allowed. But Donald Trump doesn't seem to suffer for that dishonesty the way she does.
He doesn't. And I think, you know, we're just getting into June and, you know, a couple of days. And it's a long way to the election. And a lot of these, you know, things are going to shake out. You know, I have to say, it's not good for Hillary Clinton, but it does also just reinforces what people already think about her, which is that she's slippery, she's paranoid.
She's a career politician. I mean,
you know what she is? Yeah. She's a Clinton. Right. Yeah. I mean, good God, these people can never shake the legal wranglings, and some of it's personal, and, you know, Republicans will always find something, but a lot of this is self-inflicted by these people. It's so frustrating. There was a real interesting piece in CNN today online, an op-ed, I believe it was. It's kind of hard to tell with CNN anymore. And at the end, they said, so here's the summary. She broke the law, but probably didn't commit a crime. But
she violated regulations. I'm not
sure. Yeah, right. I violate regulations all the time. That's not against the law. I do so willfully because some of the regulations are wrong. I'm a situational ethicist that way, Steve Bertrand. So then Donald Trump has a meeting with Paul Ryan or midweek. And I don't know what happened there. Did you guys hear what that was all about? I think he told him to stop calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, but maybe there was more to it than that.
Well, I thought it was strange that there was a lot of rumors that the Speaker of the House was going to endorse Donald Trump, which I think is ludicrous that there's even, let me mull it over.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Who are you going to endorse at this point? You're not going to endorse Hillary Clinton. That's it's lesser two evils for Paul Ryan.
But they've got to do this dance.
The idea that we're supposed to, as a news media and even as the consumers, to buy that there's really, oh, they're really thinking about it. Come on. That's ridiculous. I mean, it's a no-brainer. It's the highest, Mitch McConnell maybe, but he's the highest ranking.
He's the highest elected official,
So, I mean, he's got to go Republican. So, to me, it just seems, I thought it was weird that he didn't do it this week. I don't know if they're just like playing it out, trying to get it as close to the convention as possible.
I think that's true. I think it also makes it look a little more sincere if it looks like you've waited and mulled it over rather than just, I mean, some of these Republicans, the ones who are really blasting Trump, it took them like 2 days, like, oh, I'm for him now, I'm voting for him. It just seemed so opportunistic, and maybe this is a way of making it look a little less cynical and opportunistic.
Paul Ryan represents the establishment Republican who, you know, voters on that side of the aisle, they voted against the establishment. They voted for Donald Trump instead of 15 others that could have been part of the establishment. And you see it on the Democrat side, too. You know, Bernie Sanders has really got the heart and soul of Democrats. I don't think that Trump and Sanders, they don't represent American politics, but they represent what we hate about it.
Sure, I get
you know,
that.
The exchange I loved this week, John, was between, well, it wasn't actually between them, but it was from Donald Trump against New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Martinez is in a swing state, a popular governor in a swing state of New Mexico. She's Hispanic. She's a woman. And, oh, she's the chairman of the Republican Governors Association. And Trump goes to New Mexico and to a state he'll need, and he just rips her. He rips her in her state and, you know, says that she's been a terrible governor. She needs to do better.
Maybe he'll run for governor.
Maybe he'll come back and run for governor. You know, and I don't know if all of this is just because she said she was, quote unquote, too busy to appear with him, you know, and that set him off. But, I mean, it's just a phenomenal thing.
He is so thin-skinned. And
it's amazing to me for all the pundits and everybody who's like, yeah, you really can't do that. You can't tussle with her. Oh, you really can't call Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas. And his numbers get better. I mean, I'm
still in denial, Justin. I think you get away with it when you win the election. I used to say that about the primary. So he is going to be the candidate, but I still don't think this works.
Yeah.
I think this is all good
theater. When the election is over, I'd like us to go back through all the old mincing rascals and pull out
all
the sound
denials.
Bites. Well, and mine too. You know, this is it. He has finally gone too far.
Yeah, thank you, Eric. Yeah, well, I've been wrong all along. I said Rubio. Although Rubio kind of surfaced late this week, didn't he? And the latest, maybe, if you're keeping score at home, fun thing Donald Trump said was that he wanted to debate Bernie Sanders in a stadium for charity. $10 million for a woman's thing, he said. But now that's not going to happen either. Thank God for that. Let's pause. We told you that spelling bee spell off final question was just so much fun. It's not a long clip, but I want you to hear it. And we'll play that next on WGN. Never before have 350,000 people paid to see one single sporting event. That will be the case this weekend for the Indy 500. The weather's kind of iffy, but yeah, they're going to run it. If not Sunday, then on Monday. We'll talk to Pete Pistone, who knows more about motorsports than just about anybody, after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. I'm John Williams. Jairam Hathwar and Nihar Janga are the co-champions of the U.S. Scripps National Spelling Bee. Nihar, aged 11, and Jairam, aged 13, went head-to-head for 25 rounds with the annual contest going late into the night in Maryland. I can't say anything. I'm just in fifth grade, said Nihar, the youngest champion since 2002. After his win, each gets $45,000 in cash and prizes. This is the third tie in a row at the B. The kids are so good anymore, they know all the words. I believe this is what happened. It went 25 final rounds between the two. At one point, one of the kids missed a word, but then the other kid missed a word, so they both had a mark against them. It came down to the 25th and final word.
Feldenkrais.
Feldenkrais. Can I have the definition?
Feldenkrais doesn't really have a definition. It is used for a system of aided body movements intended to increase body awareness and ease tension.
Can I have the language of origin?
It's from a trademark. Feldenkrais.
F-E-L-D-E-N-K-R-A-I-S. Feldenkrais.
That's correct.
Okay, that's insane, right? Because that's not how you are spelling it in your head. And it's funny because even as he kind of ramped up to the end, you could tell that he knew that he had it. And the crowd knew that he knew that he had it. So now it's the other kid's turn. Here's his word.
Gesellschaft.
See, now if I'm him, I'm ticked. I don't know how hard Feldenkrais was, but I don't even know what this guy just said.
That's two words, first of all. Gazelle and shaft.
I know those. It's a sound. I think you're supposed to say, God bless you, but here's his word.
Gazelle shaft, may I have the definition?
Now, what's going on there? Everybody's all excited, and they're kind of laughing like, oh, he's going to nail Gesundheit. We don't even know what this word is.
A rationally developed mechanistic type of social relationship characterized by impersonally contracted associations between persons.
Oh, that Gesundheit. Okay, fine.
Gesellschaft, is this from a German word?
Yes, it is.
G-E-S-E-L-L-S-C-H-A-F-T. Gesellschaft.
That is.
Congratulations! It was a layup for the kid. Everybody was cheering. They were clapping for him at half court on that one.
Well, it's some of those words, there are like parts that you want them to get past, and once they get that past that part, then you know they're going to get like the FT at the end or something. You know what
right.
I mean?
So, in Gesellschaft, if he can figure out how to spell gazelle, which you can't, the shaft is pretty easy, right?
Or something like that. I think, yeah, people get in the minds and they're like, oh, if he just gets this one letter, then he'll be fine.
Really? Well, I wonder if they have the word up on a... Does the audience know the correct spelling of the word, do you think, Griff?
Or... I'm not sure. They do it on TV, they show you.
Oh, they do, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know about in the room. But I think the audience reaction when they first read the word is related to the fact that that kid, Nihar, throughout the whole thing, he wouldn't ask for the definition. He would tell them the definition after they said it, for a lot of them. So people were starting to anticipate him doing that. They'd say some word, and he'd be like, is this, I'm pretty sure that's Irish Prime Minister's second assistant, the formal title for that, or something like that. And he would always get it right.
Wow.
He didn't just know the spellings, he knew the definitions. It was crazy. So that's what that audience participation was a little bit, I think.
So they were kind of jazzed about that question, which seemed kind of like a non sequitur.
Yeah, even though he didn't know the definition right away, but they, I don't know, they were just riled.
He knew the definition. I think he was just breathing a little bit.
Yeah, maybe.
So you watched this. Did you have a dog in this hunt?
I was rooting for J-Ram a little bit, I think. But
you're a J-Ram guy.
I'm a J-Ram guy.
We had a big pool at work. I had Michigan State. I was out early. I had no shot.
Not good spellers at Michigan State, so that was a bad choice. I'm just kidding. I don't want to offend anybody.
I was happy for these kids. By the way, if you're wondering about this fact, too, it says here, after several rounds, the announcer said, this is a beautiful moment. If you both spell the next word correctly, you will be declared co-champions. I thought that was a layer of pressure neither of these kids needed. They both got their words right. The audience erupted in cheers. J-Ram and Nihar are the 9th consecutive winners of South Asian descent. J-Ram's brother, Siram, was the 2014 co-champion. Happy day for all of them. That's a lot of fun to watch. All right, the news is next. Pete Pistone talks about the Indy 500. That's what we do here. Coming up next on WGN. Thank you, Bob. You an Indy 500 or NASCAR fan?
Not really, no. I've become intrigued by the Formula E, which is the electric-powered auto racing.
Wow, cool. I didn't even know. Oh, yeah. You know what? I think that's what they ran when we took a bunch of listeners to Paris a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they have a tour.
Closed down parts of the streets, and they had an electric car race. I guess the cars go pretty fast.
They go pretty fast.
Well, this is the 100th running of the Indy 500, and 350,000 people are going to go. It's the first time it's sold out. It's the largest crowd ever for a single sporting event. Let me give you one other sort of trivia, and then we'll bring in our guest, Pete Pistone. Of the last 20 Indy 500s, how many times has an American won the race? This is our race. It's America's Indy 500. Of the last 20, how many times has an American won the race?
I'm going to not Google this like I didn't Google the other thing.
No, you've
still
got
it right. How
that.
Many times? Four times.
Four times. Let's ask Pete Pistone if he knows. Hey, Pete, last 20 races, how many times has an American won the race?
I can't tell you how many times. I can tell you the last guy was Ryan Hunter-Reay a couple years ago, but I would say in the last 20 years, maybe two at the most.
Yeah, five. You guys are about right.
Five.
15
Bob was
of the
right.
last 20 have been.
It's
an it's an international phenomenon, as is Pete Pistone, who joins us again here on WGN. Pete, how are you?
I'm doing well, John. I always have a great time when I have a chance to talk to you. And Indy 500, as you say, tomorrow, a big motorsports weekend. NASCAR as well. You know, I heard you guys talk about Formula E. Here's the thing, John. You might not have even known the race was going on because those cars don't make any noise.
Yeah, they just go whoosh, like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And by the way, the Indy 500 this weekend, and then what's the NASCAR event this weekend?
The NASCAR race is the Coca-Cola 600, which is Sunday night in Charlotte, so it's the longest race of the year. So if you're a motorsports fan, actually you can start the morning with Formula One, the Grand Prix of Monaco, then you got the Indy 500. And then you got the NASCAR race in Charlotte. So it is the biggest day in motorsports coming up tomorrow.
Yeah. 11:19, I believe, is when they start the race tomorrow, our time. Does that sound about right? 11:19?
Yep, that's right. And I'll tell anybody that if you're just a casual fan, when the green flag flies, there's nothing like it. But the lead up to it, John, the pre-race ceremony at Indianapolis is just – it's so moving. It's a salute to the military, the troops. It's very patriotic. And as you mentioned, it's the 100th race, and there's a lot of buzz, a lot of energy down in Indianapolis this year for sure.
What's new with the Indy cars this year? Are they faster? Are they safer? Is there some special, you know, challenge between any of them I should know about?
Well, you say safer, and I know when you say safer in auto racing, that's a relative term. But they did make a change because last year one of the things that happened was we saw some cars get sideways. And when the cars get sideways, because they're so light, sometimes air gets underneath them and they go upside down and they fly. And obviously that's something that IndyCar officials don't want to happen. Thankfully, nobody was seriously injured. They made a modification to the bottom of the cars. You can't have any fail-safe, John. I mean, there's no way you can make sure they never go up off the ground. But because of what they've implemented to try to keep them safer and on the ground, they drive a little differently. And I think what I've seen so far this week in practice and qualifying leads me to believe these cars are a handful to drive. I talked to a couple of drivers this week, and they believe it's going to be a very competitive race because they don't think anybody's got a clear-cut advantage over anyone else. I think by the time we throw the checkered flag tomorrow, you could give me 12, 13 names, and I wouldn't be surprised to hear one of those guys being in victory lane, drinking the milk, and celebrating the 100th win.
I was watching some of the time trials, and, you know, that should be boring because it's just a single car going around the track by itself. But some of the angles they were showing kind of gave you a sense of how fast the cars were going, and it seemed to me like I saw 230 or 240 on the backstretch. Is that possible?
Yeah, and Indianapolis qualifying is a little different. Instead of just taking one lap or two laps and it's the fastest of the two, they do a four-lap average. So the drivers all took four laps last week, and what you were watching was basically a cumulative total of the four laps, and that was the average speed. The average speed that won the pole, James Hinchcliffe, the guy who's on the pole, is about 230 miles an hour and change, but that's the average. You're right. They were topping out at 240 on the back straightaway. Now, they won't go that fast in the race because when you're out there by yourself, you have what we call clean air. It's not a lot of turbulence because you don't have other cars around you. But they'll still be going in the 220, 225. But bottom line is, I think for a lot of fans, and myself included, the speeds and the numbers are kind of cool. You know, they're eye-popping. But to me, I think people want to see a competitive race. If the drivers can run side by side and put on an entertaining race, I think that's what everybody's after. And I feel like that's the sentiment that we're going to see in the race tomorrow.
Is that more common with the Indy circuit as opposed to NASCAR? Or NASCAR is usually pretty close together too, right?
Yeah, it's actually the opposite. NASCAR has got a situation where you'll see on a regular basis 2-3 wide racing. And again, the NASCAR stock cars are 3,400 pounds. They're full fendered. Indy cars are half that weight. They're basically airplanes on wheels, open wheels, you know, no fenders on them. So getting side-by-side with an IndyCar is a little more difficult, but I think the rules that we have this year and the layout of Indianapolis, 2.5 miles around, it's more of a rectangle than an oval, I think it's conducive to some good side-by-side racing. I think that's the hope for tomorrow.
They changed the layout of the track?
No, they don't change the layout of the track. It's always been it's not an oval. It's not a true oval. It's a rectangle. It's got a long straightaway, then a turn one, you have a little short straightaway, turn two, another long back straightaway, and then turn three, little straightaway, turn four. So if you look at it from an airplane, from an overhead view, you're literally looking at a kind of a square, if you will, rounded off. So it's different. It's not the true oval like we have here at Chicagoland Speedway or something like that. But I'll tell you tomorrow, too, if when you look at that overhead shot, you mentioned 350,000 people jammed into that place. That's going to be quite the spectacle to see that many people in one spot for a sporting event.
What happens if they get some rain? What's their tolerance for that?
Well, the one problem that Indianapolis has that we don't have at a lot of the NASCAR tracks is they do not have lights there. So they would be at the mercy of trying to get it in before the sun sets. Now, the official rules are, it's a lot like a baseball game, John. If you go five innings in a baseball game and it gets rained out, it's official. A race is official when it gets past the halfway mark. So if they got to 251 miles and they weren't able to restart it because of rain, it would be an official race. But it looks like there might have a couple of spotty showers here and there. I think they're pretty confident they're going to get the whole 500 miles in tomorrow.
A lot of times I watch races, Pete, and they're all racing around. Then it gets very competitive at the end, and then there's some sort of crash. So then they do a restart. And so for all of that racing, they bunch them all back up all over again, and then they run the last 10 laps like nothing mattered before. You know, you wonder what the purpose of it all is if everybody's going to start from scratch with 10 laps to go.
Well, and in those cases, yeah, I could see where you'd get that view, but in many other cases, you don't get that. So you get the whole run all the way through and a couple of caution flags here and there. And, you know, I think for the casual auto racing fan, there are so much strategy that goes into this, whether or not you should pit for fresh tires because that gives you better grip and turn makes your car go faster, or should you risk being out there and go on the older tires? When should you pit for fuel? You never know when a caution flag is going to come, to your point, for an accident or a spin. So there's so many variables, I think, over the course of a race. I think the Indy 500 for sure, in a course of three hours and 15 minutes, you're just going to see a lot of different things that no one can predict. And then the NASCAR race, 600 miles, that's the longest race we have all year. That race takes almost 4 hours to run. That turns out to be more of the old man versus machine. You know, can you have your car last and be there at the end and not have a problem with a tire or an engine or something like that, and put yourself into being in position to make that run for the checkered flag at the end of the race if it comes up to a sprint like you just described.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and bet the mortgage. So just give me the winner of the 600-mile race and the 500-mile race.
All right, well, please don't bet the mortgage. I'll give you the 600-mile race winner. I think it's going to be a man who's actually going to start outside the front row tomorrow. His name is Joey Logano. He won the Daytona 500 last year. He won six times last year in NASCAR. He has not won this year, and I think he's going to be the guy to go to victory lane. And he drives for Roger Penske. And I think, to me, Roger Penske, who also has 16 IndyCar wins, I think he's going to have a double celebration tomorrow, because I think Juan Pablo Montoya, who won the race last year at Indianapolis, I think he's going to win again tomorrow. And if he does, Roger Penske would have that rare treat of winning both the Indy 500 and the Coke 600 on the same day. And no team owner has ever done that on the same day. So I think that would be quite the accomplishment.
And more importantly, has Juan Pablo Montoya ever been on Dancing with the Stars?
He has not. That would be Elio Castro Neves, who actually is in the race and actually was in town the other night. He threw out the first pitch at the White Sox game. But he's also in contention. Like I say, I'm picking Montoya, but Monday I could be talking to you, and if you gave me 12 or 13 other names, I'd be like, yeah, I can see that. I think that's how competitive this race is going to be Sunday.
Okay, put all of your money down on Logano and Montoya, says Pete Pistone. You heard it here first.
Hold a little back. Hold a little bit back.
Yeah, enough to buy a tent. Hey, good to have you on. I know you're busy with family stuff today, Pete. Thanks for giving us some of your time today.
Always a lot of fun, John. Take care.
Hey, where can people find you, Pete? Can I read you? Can I hear you? Can I see you someplace?
Sure. I'm part of the SiriusXM Sports family. If you listen in the morning on Channel 90, I co-host a show called The Morning Drive. It's on the NASCAR channel. We talk NASCAR, and in the afternoon, Bleacher Report Radio, which is a general sports. I'm on from 2 to 5. And if you look at MRN.com, MotorRacingNetwork.com, you can find some writings and columns and that kind of thing. So always a lot of fun to talk to you, John, and I love being busy and talking racing. It's a lot of fun.
Have a good Memorial Day, Pete.
You too, John. Take care.
That's Pete Pistone on WGN. By the way, speaking of sports, I talked yesterday to Dr. Art Kaplan. He is a medical ethicist, and he was one of the 150 people to sign that letter to the World Health Organization about the Olympics. They say they should move it or postpone it. Now, since they sent that letter, made it public, you've probably heard on the news here, the International Olympic Committee says, oh, we're fine. We're good. There's no, we've got this under control. But his reservations about her are really interesting. And that's next on WGN. 720 WGN. This is John Williams. The Mincing Rascals were earlier. Remember, you can always hear that segment online. We posted at WGNplus.com. It's on my Facebook page, and you can subscribe to that too. Another one of our regular features is called the Vibe Score segment, and we'll get to that in the next half hour. But speaking of sports, we did a minute ago with Pete Pistone about the Indy 500. I visited yesterday with Dr. Arthur Kaplan. He's the director of the Division of Medical Ethics at New York University. He is the co-author of this letter that you've been hearing about. 150 medical and scientific professionals sent a letter to the World Health Organization, and they said you should postpone or move, can you imagine that, the Olympics from Rio. I asked him, how safe do you think it is in Brazil?
Things have gotten worse. You probably, and listeners know, we've had all this political and economic turmoil, to be nice about it, in Brazil. They've cut their budget for Zika because they don't have the money. So control efforts are slipping. That means less air conditioning, less screens, less repellent. I'm not sure they're up to the task. The fact that they haven't cleaned the sewage out of the water sports.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Is it just Zika, or is it just the general health condition there as well, the water?
General health has fallen apart, I think. And it's not good for the Brazilians either. Forget about the tourists. They get bit by these mosquitoes too. Some of the venues are going to be out in the rural areas. Some people say, well, we don't have to worry about it because it's winter down there when the Olympics take place. But, you know, it's pretty balmy in a Brazilian winter. And when you get out to the jungle, I'm afraid you still have a lot of mosquitoes around.
So is it just the athletes that you're worried about, Dr. Kaplan, or is it that hundreds of thousands of people from around the world would go there and then return to their native countries?
It's really the hundreds of thousands. I mean, I'm worried about athletes, but I'm also worried you're bringing in people from all over the world, places that never would be exposed to Zika. I mean, it's coming here for sure, but it isn't in India, it isn't in Thailand, it isn't in Vietnam, and they love mosquitoes. So if you bring it home, either a mosquito piggybacks in your suitcase or you get infected and communicate it to others, or a mosquito bites you back home, you could have a lot of rapid spread, and that really does trouble me.
If I have the Zika virus, can I spread it to other humans? How?
Two ways. There's sexual transmission, and then you can be bitten by a mosquito, and then the mosquito goes on to bite somebody else.
Really? So I would be sort of a carrier, and then mosquitoes feasting on me would spread it all around?
Yep.
Wow. So you,
yep.
Interesting. So if
that's
you come,
why it's a little different, or a lot different, I should say, from Ebola, last year's disease of the summer. Ebola, you have to have close, intimate, personal contact, and you have to be symptomatic to give it to somebody else. This virus is a little bit more like hepatitis. It resides in your body, and it can be transmitted even if you have no symptoms.
Does everybody that gets the Zika virus have... what if an adult male gets the Zika virus? What would happen to him then?
Well, that's something else we've been learning about. So at first, people thought it's just pregnant women. Then people realize men could be carriers. Then people realize some men, tiny number, but some are getting symptoms, including paralysis, something called Guillain-Barré syndrome. So we're learning that everybody's kind of at risk, although certainly women of childbearing age, women are pregnant, they're at the greatest risk.
When you signed this letter saying, all right, the Olympics should be moved or postponed, was it really just to alert people to being cautious, or do you seriously think... How do you move the Olympics? You can't move the Olympics.
Well, more likely to postpone, and people have said to me, postpone? When have they ever postponed anything like that? Well, they actually did it about 15 years ago with FIFA, with the Women's World Cup. They moved it because, remember SARS, another epidemic?
Yeah, sure, SARS,
those
yeah.
Games to a different place. There are places you could move these games to that don't have Zika and that have facilities. If you were of a mind, it wouldn't be easy. But I'll answer your question. Do I really think you're going to postpone or move them? No, I don't. That's an extreme long shot. But the other thing we yelled about in the letter was, could we have like an open, transparent, public meeting with people debating all the risk issues so that at least if we're all going to Rio, we can go there with our eyes open and maybe also settle the question, if somebody gets sick or they spread this disease to some country, who's responsible?
Well, why are you sending this letter to the World Health Organization? Shouldn't the IOC be the one getting it?
Yeah, we sent it to both, but World Health has been the medical advisor to the IOC, and they keep saying it's okay. Their literal description is this is an epidemic of international concern, but they keep saying don't worry about going to Rio. So we're a little worried that the WHO is a friend of the IOC. They work together in a good way. They try to promote sports and the Olympics to make people healthier. That's great, but they are close, and so would be useful if the WHO would say, all right, we'll stand back. Let's have that independent panel, put it on the web, the internet, let the world watch.
If you had a son or daughter who'd qualified, you know, it's a very narrow window. They only come along once every 4 years. So
yeah.
Most great athletes have one or maybe two games in the prime of their careers. What would you tell your son or daughter to do?
So if my daughter is childbearing age and sexually active, probably no. If it's a male, I'd probably say long sleeves for you, a lot of repellent, and here's a bunch of condoms.
It's interesting because that's the same advice I gave to my son when he went away to the U. Thank you, Bob. John Williams here on WGN Radio. I like to play this song because they played it at my wedding, Brenda and I. Very close to this.
Yeah, they did.
This was important to me. I said, I've got to have whatever this is. What is that, Griffin? What are we listening to there?
It's a song called Panda by Designer.
Panda by Designer, I knew that. That is the first song in our Vibe Score segment. That's what you're listening to now. On Saturdays at this time, we do something called the Vibe Score. It's an app that my cousin Tom Hegberg and I developed, and you can get it for free, too. It feeds you the news and asks you to score a question at the end of the stories that you're interested in. If you're following the music group, what's the story on this one, Griff?
It's a song that's been at the top of the charts or near the top of the charts for about a month, and it's kind of rising still. It was sampled on Kanye West's latest album, but it's a hit in its own right. Designer is just a 19-year-old kid who bought a beat from a guy in England for $200 and rapped that song over it. It's his first song that he's really put out, and It's a huge, huge hit. And what do you think of the unexpected hit single?
I'm underwhelmed by it, so I give it a 67. But I also vibed after I saw Beyonce, and so nothing is like up to par. My tastes have been risen to a whole new level.
Here's what I'm going to do, Decker. After the show, I'll post in the Chicago section Beyonce's show, if you saw it, Vibe the Show.
Okay.
What will you give it?
101.
Which is impossible.
And I don't give out 100.
Break the app.
Well, Beyonce broke Chicago because she was so fierce last night.
Yeah.
I wish I was going again tonight. It was
Sound a little spent, Kristen.
I have no voice for the second weekend in a row because I work hard and I play harder.
Okay, so 101 for Beyonce, and on this song by Panda.
No, the song is called Panda.
The zoo, they had the panda there, and they gave it. I still don't know what bought a beat for $200 means, but anyway.
A producer made the music, and he bought it and rapped over it.
And if you can do that, you can become an international star.
That's where we're at, yeah.
Shouldn't you have gone to school and learned to play the piano like we did back in the day?
It's getting a 57, so the people are similarly ambivalent.
Unimpressed.
Underwhelmed.
I like it a lot.
But 1 to 100, we get to rate them. Griff, what do you got for us?
In the What's Up category, we talked about it. The Scripps National Spelling Bee took place on Thursday
night.
The
most awesome thing in the world. I have not vibed on this one yet.
Okay, resulting in a tie for the third year in a row. What would be your score for the Spelling Bee?
90. It's awesome. It's everything about it is right, except that they're competing for a skill that has no value. But other than that,
wait,
not true.
Did you just say they have a skill that has no value?
Affirmative. You've heard about spell check, right?
It doesn't work all the time.
So what are you going to do? Call
Najara? And when you don't have spell check, like when you're writing Facebook status updates and you're like, oh my gosh, how do I spell that word? I know I'm going to post it. Then look like an idiot. People are going to comment below. Then I have to go back and edit. And then people can see that I went back and edited and they knew I didn't know how to spell it in the first place.
Yeah.
If you're a good speller, you don't have to worry about it.
I will say
that.
Spell check does seem to get rid of a lot of the need for good spelling, but people misspell things all the time. You'd think that it would fix things, but it doesn't. And actually, some guy tweeted at the spelling bee, I don't know if you saw this, while it was going on, and he said, I don't like that section where they send the kids after they get knocked out. There's like a little couch, and he's like, it's a pity couch. He said, quit telling kids that it's okay to lose, but he spelled lose with two O's. And then the spelling bee tweeted back at him, lose, like with the correction.
Go to the couch.
And he deleted his account. That's true. It's all true.
That's amazing.
It's getting an 86, the spelling bee.
I'm giving it a 90 just because I love those kids. Lord, they're all going to be something someday, that's for sure.
Yeah, I didn't even realize it was on, and I was lucky enough that somebody I live with came in, turned on the TV, I got to see the final few words, and I loved it. I got so wrapped up in it, and I gave it an 89.
There you go. In real sports, Golden State took game 5 against the Thunder, but they are still down in the series 3-2. Yeah. So they play again tonight in OKC. Who do you think will win this series? So 100 is the Thunder. 0 is the Warriors.
I'm a 90 again for OKC, and I've been a Warriors fan all year long. I've been on the Steph Curry bus. I'm completely off the Steph Curry bus now. I'm getting a little tired of his cavalier, smug attitude, and that has nothing to do with the mouth guard, though that doesn't help either. I'm done with the Warriors. I'm done with Steph Curry, and now I found a new love for Oklahoma City, and I've got a 90 for them, a 90.
Engineer Krista says you've regained your sanity. You're sane now.
Well, that's because she's a hater of the Warriors.
I would go like 77 also. I think the Thunder are going to win.
But isn't it amazing? I mean, this is the team that we all thought wasn't going to lose 10 games. And now you don't think they can even win their conference title. That says something about Steph being injured, and OKC is, you know, an awesome team. But wow, this has been a real turnabout.
Yeah, right, it's getting a 59.
So people are slightly more in favor.
Not sure what to think because it's so crazy that this is happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the viral category, a high schooler flips a water bottle at a talent show. Watch the clip. And it's millions and millions of views might make more sense, but maybe they won't. Have you watched this video that I'm talking about?
I did, and I don't know. Your brother sent it to me. He goes, "Hey, you got to see this. It's awesome."
Yeah.
I watched it. I don't even know what I'm looking for. What happened there?
I gave it a 12.
What
it
happened?
It made me mad.
The guy comes out, flips a water bottle. Everybody goes bananas, and he walks off.
I can't believe you guys. I gave it a 99.
What?
Oh,
what?
I watched it. I laughed so hard. I watched it about 10 more times in a row.
No, seriously,
about 30 seconds.
Just tell us what happens, though.
Music. It's set to music. The guy is on stage at the talent show. He kind of swaggers up to this table, and he's got a water bottle, and you're not exactly sure what's going to happen. And then he flips the water bottle one time, and it lands perfectly on the table, which is, like, kind of cool. But just the crowd erupts. They go crazy.
they did, yeah.
And it makes me laugh really hard. I can't tell you why, but I got the right reaction.
I got angry that I wasted time watching it.
I can't believe you guys.
How much time did you waste on it there, Decker?
However long that video was, I thought, that... I mean, I watch a lot of stupid stuff, but there's usually like a payoff where I'm like, oh, whatever.
Payoff? Are you kidding me?
There was no payoff for me.
They went absolutely crazy. I think the audience was in favor of this video.
The audience was primed on that. I don't think that was... I think they were part of the show. That was not a legitimate reaction.
Agreed.
But they didn't know if he was going to do it. What if he didn't get it?
Wait. They didn't know if he was going to do what, Griffin?
Flip the water bottle and land it on the table. I feel like I'm going crazy. All right. Also in viral, the Chewbacca mom. Wow. A mom in a Chewbacca mask.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think it's really sweet. I'm not as in love with it as all of the morning TV show producers are, but I'm like an 80 on this one. It's good.
I gave it a 92.
The world needs a laughing, happy face right now, you know? So
yeah, and then when you go and like kind of stalk her page, she's a nice person. She's just a regular mom.
I like how in the beginning she goes, "Hi," you know, she kind of makes fun of her size, and then she said, "I know you're thinking that," and then she goes, "That's okay. It's all love. It's all good." And I just thought, she's just got such a sweet, kind of hysterical disposition. That's what won me over.
And Kohl's has rewarded her greatly.
Oh, how so?
They have sent her so many different Star Wars things. They've got masks for her whole family.
Oh, boy.
She made them probably millions in sales.
Oh, yeah, you cannot get that mask now. On the secondary market, it costs hundreds of bucks to
you
get a Chewbacca mask.
You say you want a laughing, happy face is a good thing in the world. In the water bottle video, there are hundreds of laughing, happy faces.
Well, all right, give me another one, Griff.
Including mine. In the movies category, The Nice Guys, the buddy cop comedy mystery set in the 1970s starring Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe had a disappointing opening at the box office, like $11 million. But critics like it pretty well. Have you guys seen it?
No. We didn't vibe on it. You didn't either, Griff?
I saw it. I liked it pretty well. It was a good time.
What score did you give it?
I gave it a 73, and it's getting a 77. Anyway. Chicago, we talked about this. Broadway sensation Hamilton will arrive in Chicago this fall. And there's already some controversy about who's getting tickets and who's not. But we just want to know, are you excited for Hamilton in Chicago? What's your score?
Yes, 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 86.
Yeah, I'm about a 90 on this one, too. I've had some high scores today. I think I mostly want it because I can't have it. But everything I've seen, the clips you can watch on YouTube are amazing. And friends of mine who have seen it including Lou Manfredini, who's going to give me tickets, by the way.
Oh, that's so nice of him.
Oh, God,
is he taking the whole show?
He's taking Brenda and I to the show.
And Griff and me?
Just me and Brenda. But I'll run it by him. But Lou, people who see it love it. So I'm very excited about it, too.
I thought that Wicked took Chicago by storm. And when I heard you interview Chris Jones and he said that Chicago will have not seen anything like this, like, I can't even wrap my head around it because I thought that Chicago went nuts for Wicked and Jersey Boys. And I thought, how can any show beat those two?
By the way, we didn't do this one, I don't think, yet on... Oh, yes, we did. But, Griff, are you going to ask us about the Dancing with the Stars finale?
No, go ahead.
Okay, so on Vibe Score, Dancing with the Stars, should Niall DeMarco, Ginger Z, or Paige VanZant have won? Ginger Z gets kicked off of the final three, so it's down between Niall DeMarco, who is the deaf model. He's handsome. He cannot hear a sound, and yet he dances well. And then Paige VanZant, who is the pretty, blonde-haired, ultimate fighter dancer. And they gave it to Niall, and I got so angry because Paige was the better dancer. And I find myself getting weirdly involved in this. I got angrier about that than anything last week. I'm like, why do you have a dancing show for 3 months and then the wrong person wins? This is not how it should end.
I don't watch it, so.
No comment.
Yeah, just leave me be. Don't talk to me about it. I'm no good. Okay, that's our Vibe Score segment. That's it, right, Griff? Any more for us, or are we done? You want to do another one? You got one more?
Zika virus.
I got one more.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Zika virus. I'm against it.
No, how worried are you about it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well. Experts say that mosquitoes carrying the Zika virus will be in the U.S. within next month. Does that concern you?
I'm getting more and more, to be honest with you. I think it's the media's fault. I think this is more us than them, but... I didn't vote on this one yet. Griff, ask me again. I'll just give you a gut check. Go ahead and give it to me.
You worried about the Zika virus?
No. 28. Boom.
Boom.
How about you, Deck?
You know, I'm at a 77. I'm not really, like, I don't lay awake worrying about it, but I do think mosquitoes are gross. And I'm also of the sex and age, even though I'm not going to be having kids anytime soon, but still, they're targeting me in the media saying...
Yeah.
Women of kid-carrying ages need to be careful. And also, I'm mad at the Zika virus. Because I was supposed to go on a girls' trip to Puerto Rico, and we had to cancel it because all of my sorority sisters were freaking out.
You're mad at a virus. Okay, that's our Vibe Score segment. Kristen Decker always chimes in on this. She helps us out at Vibe Score. Thank you, KD.
You're welcome. Hey, real quick, Mary Schmeek has a great column about Walking Man, and you get to find out a little more about his past.
Kidding? Oh, she
and
does.
His family.
Oh, that's so interesting. We spent some time earlier in the show today talking about Walking Man, who is a Chicago institution, a man who strolls the streets of Chicago, got mugged badly this week. We talked about him earlier in the show. So is that online right now, KD?
Yeah, I just read it. She posted it, I think, on her Facebook page. So you can go there and I don't think you have any trouble with the paywall that way. But everybody should subscribe so you can read Mary on a daily basis.
Amen to that. The Boys from the Beat say hi next on WGN. Steve and Johnny later on. The Boys from the Beat coming up next. Mark Carman's getting ready to entertain and inform you. Probably both, right, Mark? You're going to do both of them, entertain and inform? No, I don't hear Carm. Do you guys hear Mark Carm?
I do. I hear me. Hi.
There you are.
I'm sorry, John. I was saying goodbye to Steve and Johnny, who are...
Hi.
They're the most professional radio tandem in the history of the world. They're getting ready for their Monday Memorial Day show. He just asked me, can you figure out how to do reverb through the aux pot? I'm like, are you out of your mind? I barely know how to turn on my microphone.
Evidently. Well,
thank you.
How are you, man?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Good. So just give me some of the highlights. What's coming up on your afternoon gig here?
Well, we have one incredibly fun guest at 3:35. I don't know if you were paying deep attention to the Cub game yesterday, but one guy in the upper deck, John, he caught two foul balls. I don't know if that's ever been done in the history of professional baseball. So Phil Kuntz, who was part hammered, part fan, will be with us. And
is he the son of Rusty Kuntz?
I don't know his family lineage, Anna Pogue, but I think that he's worthy of being on this radio station
so
today.
So you found this guy and were able
well,
to get him?
I like to walk around the ballpark to many seats during a baseball game, and so I get up there, and he's on the railing taking a picture with two baseballs, and it was pretty obvious that the question had to be asked. Did you just catch both those baseballs? He said, yes, I did, as he was having quite a fine day, him and his entire crew. And I said, well, you, sir, need to be on WGN Radio.
Excellent, excellent. All right. Well, I'm in. That's all I got to say. I'm totally in. What's happened to our White Sox, guys?
Adam?
Well,
I mean, you know, we're not scoring runs. I know that. But, boy, talk about hitting a wall.
I have some stats, John, that I don't really know if they spell doom or maybe things aren't so bad, but basically the White Sox are 4-12 in their last 16 games. That matches their worst stretch of last season. Last season was not a good season. So you could look at that as, well, maybe this is a sign that this team really isn't as good and is maybe more like last year's team than maybe what we thought in April. However, on the flip side, the 12 losses, they've only lost those games by an average of 2 runs per game. So it's not like they're getting killed. They've been competitive, but still, 12 losses in 16 games, that's not good.
There's two sides here, John. Either the best part of their season has already happened, or they're just pacing themselves and having their one bad stretch right now.
Yeah, I hope that's it, because I want to see the Cubs play the Sox in the World Series. And, or, you know, 2 weeks ago, that was actually a fun conversation. Are you guys surprised to see the Golden State Warriors having the trouble they are with OKC?
I am. I very much am. And we're actually going to have some NBA talk on the show today with LeBron James going to the final for the sixth straight year. Adam Hogue didn't know that, John, until now, and he's looking at me like, oh, please don't do this to me. But I booked a guest. I've got all sorts of last-minute NBA thoughts. I just felt like Adam would jump on board. But I think that Oklahoma City wins tonight, and it's over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Imagine that. I mean, we thought it was a lock that they'd win – you know, that they break the Bulls record and that they would just sweep the whole dang thing. And now they might not even win their conference championship, which is too bad because, well, either way, I'm happy to see OKC win. And I think that would be a fun final against LeBron James and, you know, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love and all of those guys. But if you'd asked me a month ago, will the Golden State Warriors be in it? Everybody would have said, yeah.
No doubt.
Absolutely. They're a huge disappointment if they're not in it.
You know,
hey guys.
You know who's really happy about this, John, is Krista Flores. She loves Russell Westbrook. I don't know if you know that, but now you do.
I know how to talk to her about sports. Our engineer is in charge of my microphone, and every day I say, boy, them Spurs, they're really something, aren't they? And then she treats me good. All right, fellas, have a real good show. We'll talk to you next week. And then Steve and Johnny, how about that later on? Oh, that's right, that's right. Yeah, Steve and Johnny are on Monday. Yeah. And they're here today getting ready for that. That does make them pros. The news is coming up on WGN.